Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you very much for spending some time with me. I think we're going to get busy quite quickly because I want to get as much in to this hour as possible. As you know, what has occurred over, well, what's one of the big news that's out today? I mean, we have that Facebook is planning on purchasing this company called WhatsApp. It's a real small company. And what's going to happen with that company? There are a few employees who on, if you split up how much each employee is worth based on what the company is worth and what it does, it turns out about $340-something million. So this little company is being purchased by Facebook for $19 billion. So here it is. This week, Facebook said it would purchase that small company, WhatsApp, $19 billion. And, you know, I started reading the New York Times, and, you know, I like to read David Brooks. I like to read Krugman and a lot of others, both liberals, conservatives, and anywhere in between, because that's the way we actually formulate opinions, are able to discriminate information and be positive with said information discrimination. Well, he had one statement that made a whole lot of sense, David Brooks did, but I think he came to the wrong conclusion and used the wrong person or the wrong institute to corroborate what he was saying. But anyway, what he said was, but now capitalism faces its greatest moral crisis since the Great Depression. The nature of that crisis can be captured into statistics when Facebook entered a deal to buy WhatsApp this week. It agreed to pay a price equal to $345 million per WhatsApp employee. Meanwhile, the share of the economic pie for the middle 60% of earners nationally has fallen from 53% to 45% since 1970, and the numbers that he chose to use is even worse because he chose sort of a window that doesn't show how deep our real problem on income inequality, wealth disparity is, and why these types of deals are probative. Anyhow, David Brooks' entire article missed the point. It misses that his type of deal represents to the entire society, what this type of deal represents to the entire society. Interesting, it misses that this form of capitalism that creates wealth without producing or producing little relative to reward is not only corrosive but destructive. When I had a different topic that I was going to write my essay about at Daily Coast, and I said, you know what, this is a bit too important for me to let it fly, so I decided to make my topic on that, and I'm going to read it. It's not a very long one, and then the mics will be open. Please remember, folks, the telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I want to get a lot of people calling. I want you to be ready to say your point, and let's get with the program, my friends. The title of the essay was or is, should it be capitalism for the few or free enterprise for all? Repeating, should it be capitalism for the few or free enterprise for all? It'll be dropping tomorrow at 5 Central Eastern Time at thedailycoast.com. Thereafter, I will have it at, our, as usual, our Coffee Party USA wall. Again, to be so that no one gets confused, I am just one voice in Coffee Party, and that's my point of view. Here it goes. David Brooks' New York Times piece, Capitalism for the Masses, is a blood boiler. Macroeconomic math is very simple. There is one mathematical fact. If the wealth of the rich is growing at consistently higher rates than the rate of the economy's aggregate wealth creation, and that rate differential is not completely attributable to sources external to the U.S., then wealth is being transferred from the poor and the middle class to the rich. That's just arithmetic, folks. If one listens to CNBC or reads the Wall Street Journal, the only thing that matters is growth. If a company does not meet growth expectations, its stock is clobbered. When a company has exhausted its growth potential because of product saturation and the inability to expand to other markets, a semblance of continued growth is usually attained on the backs of workers in the form of lower wages, lower benefits, etc. And we see that all the time. All companies are attempting to do is concessions. Concessions, union concessions, people concessions. We need to be more efficient. That's what they talk about. When that cycle is complete, stock collapse followed by either acquisition or some sort of liquidation is likely. David Brooks' article was sort of an ode to the president of the American Enterprise Institute, Arthur Brooks. Arthur Brooks and David Brooks are not related. David Brooks was enamored with Arthur Brooks' rather long essay titled, Be Open-Minded Towards Your Brothers. He intimates that Arthur Brooks is providing tough love to conservatives by suggesting they declare a truce on the social safety net. In other words, make believe you like it. Yet, the tone and ideology of his essay is still based on pointless fallacies. The 2008 elections marked the return of, this is what he says now, the guy from the Enterprise Institute, Arthur Brooks. The 2008 election marked the return of progressive politics in America. For the first time in 16 years, Democrats won both houses of Congress and the White House. They wasted no time in articulating a progressive agenda they claimed would offset the Great Recession and turn America toward greater fairness and compassion. Lifting up the poor, decreasing inequality, and curbing runaway income gains among the wealthiest Americans ranked high among their stated priorities. While Democrats took over the agenda was far from progressive. The stimulus was balanced and tax cuts remained. Inasmuch as the Affordable Care Act was better than the old system, it was a conservative plan. Banks remained private, and the capitalists that destroyed the economy were bailed out. Now, he followingly said the following. In sum, the administration ostensibly pro-poor, tough on the wealthy agenda, has led us toward a new American gilded age. Our putatively progressive president has inadvertently executed a plutocrat tour de force. In other words, in that little next paragraph, what he is stating is that in as much as supposedly the president's policies were progressive, looking to aid the poor and the middle class, it is actually what is responsible for this great transfer of wealth to the top, the new gilded age. This new American gilded age is a function of entrenched economic policy that neither the president, Republicans, nor Democrats are interested or willing to address. That's me saying that. Only an economic paradigm shift can ultimately solve the steady decline of the poor and middle class in the country. It is basic math, folks. David Brooks pointed out the perfect example, though he came to the wrong conclusion. But now capital, this is what David Brooks says now. First, the previous quote that I had was from Arthur Brooks. This one is from David Brooks. But now capitalism faces its greatest moral crisis since the Depression. The nature of that crisis can be captured in two statistics. When Facebook entered a deal to buy WhatsApp this week, it agreed to pay a price equal to $345 million per WhatsApp employee. Meanwhile, the share of the economic pie for the middle 60% of earners nationally has fallen from 53% to 45% since 1970. And I come back myself. American taxpayers built the internet. Okay, folks, remember that. Please do remember that. American taxpayers built the internet. Started with that program known as, I don't recall the name of the program right now, but it's a government program that built DARPA. That's what it is, DARPA. It used to be called ARPA. Thousands of marginally paid scientists and engineers designed the chips that allowed other engineers to build computers and servers necessary to support Facebook and WhatsApp. Let's not forget who paid for the space program that developed a lot of the shrinking of the electronics and so forth. So let's be clear where our technology came from, how it came about. It was all seeded by we the people, your government. You did it. Millions of users provided the community that is Facebook WhatsApps. In other words, Facebook is nothing unless the millions of people who have decided to put information on Facebook, to write little snippets to each other, and to give Facebook a platform where they can market advertising and profit from many other companies. So one of the raw materials to Facebook and WhatsApps is you. You, the American population, you are the persons responsible for the existence of Facebook. Yet, our form of capitalism allows a few to profit from what was really created by the masses and managed by a few. This story is replicated throughout the economy. In a fair system, that $19 billion that was paid by capitalists to purchase WhatsApp would take into account the relative value of all those that made Facebook and WhatsApp a success. This applies to the masses today. We pay tolls to keep up the roads. We pay taxes to maintain our infrastructure, our military, and our research. The working man pays up to 39% in taxes, while those that live off their capital appreciation pay 20% or so on realized gains. I could even go further when it comes to things like the social safety net. The average worker pays up to 15.2% for Social Security and Medicare, while the wealthy pays only 3%. Let's be fair, folks. While the current administration is more progressive than the Bush administration, conservatives have moved so far to the right, our current government is viewed as being more progressive than it is. Too many in our government still believe that the private sector is always more efficient than government. We the people in every sector. Others believe that government, not-for-profit entities, is best in certain sectors. If it is true that competition creates more efficiency, then the private sector should never fear government as a competitor in any sector. To be specific, some services and products should be considered utilities. All utilities should have a profit component. Or rather, all utilities should have a non-profit component. Banking, such as the Bank of North Dakota, remember that's a state-owned bank in conservative North Dakota. Guess what they have? A state-owned bank. Guess where the taxes go when people pay their taxes in North Dakota? It goes into a state-owned bank who makes a profit off of those state taxes to better. In other words, North Dakota is using North Dakotans' monies to make a profit to aid North Dakotans pay less taxes and be better stewards of the tax dollars. Folks, this is in North Dakota. National banking or state banking in North Dakota. Continuing. We should name banking, water, meaning utilities like water, fuel, electricity, and health insurance, meaning single payer public option, should all be utilities with a with an option, with a public option. It should at minimum have nonprofit components to compete for with the nonprofit, with the for profits. Think about it. If competition, if those that really believe in competition, I do believe in competition. I think competition forces us on our toes, and I think that's good. However, there can be collusion in competition when it is about profit maximization, and that's what occurs. Having utilities have a governmental or nonprofit component ensures that profit, which in certain instances is nothing but an inefficiency, it suddenly forces these utilities to have prices more in line with the populace at large, which then foments free enterprise. America's current form of capitalism kills free enterprise. It kills democracy. Real progressive policies ensure that policies are biased towards people as opposed to corporations. They create a more even playing field, a playing field where real free enterprise by the masses will strive. Suddenly, you can open your own company, and you don't have to worry that you need the buy-in power of a corporation to have the health care for your family and take care of them. Suddenly, you are in control of your life, and you can make it. So think about it, folks. That one purchase by Facebook of WhatsApps is much more telling than the media would make you believe. It make you believe it's a story of rags to riches. Hey, this Ukrainian guy was on food stamps and he came over to America. He opened WhatsApp and he made a deal with Zuckerberg and he is now a billionaire. But what did he do? Anyway, the number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I'm going to open it up with a Skype call, I believe. 1111111. Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Yeah, my name's Joe.
Hey, Joe, talk to me, my brother.
So you're a closet socialist, huh? Okay. Fine.
No, I don't. I wouldn't call it a socialist, my friend. What I would say is I'm very balanced. I wrote a book called Class Warfare, the Only Resort to Right-Wing Doom. And what I meant in that book, and I specified in that book, is that I believe in the corporation, the individual, or let me put it in the right direction. I believe in the government, the corporation, and the individual, but with policies that are biased towards the individual. In other words, I think they all have their place in society. But we have to have the correct balance so that what we see today doesn't continue.
And how would you control that balance?
How would I control that balance? It's actually not as difficult as one would believe. I think, first of all, we have to do we work with a group called Move to Amend that tries to take away inalienable rights from corporations. What I mean by that is simple. Corporations have a purpose to do good, and they do, okay? They do very good in certain instances. I think there are some industries that require corporations. However, there are certain instances where they encroach on people's personal freedoms and liberties. A good example is the chemical spills that we had in West Virginia. A good example is the ash spills we had in North Carolina. They were success. These things occurred because of states that are poor regulating states. And because they're poor regulating states, they took the bias towards the individual, towards the bias towards the corporation. People say, oh, well, the market will correct for all problems that occur. In other words, that company that spilled will be penalized with suits. And he will be sued for all the bad deeds that he did that will eventually remove him out of business. But guess what occurs? That cannot be unrung. The people that drank the water, that cannot be unrung. The spill that occurred, the ash that spilled in the river that killed the turtle, that killed the fish, that our
yeah, and there have been studies that have been shown that corporations that when they get when they're in more of collusion with government actually dirty up their own environment more
you're
than the private sector.
No, sir, Joe, you're absolutely correct.
So what would you do
collusion.
If you were, let's say, the governor of a state? How
if
would
I
you
would,
go about doing this?
Okay, first of all, we have to have a platform. Because if you saw my posting today on what Nikki Haley did, you'd understand what I'm saying here. And this is what specifically I'm talking about. Right now, if I run the state of North Carolina, mm-hmm. while you run the state of Texas, and mm-hmm. I pass restrictive regulations in North Carolina, the way we operate right now, the business will leave North Carolina and run to Texas, which is what occurs a lot in Texas. Texas touts itself as the largest growth in employment over the last 5 years. It's true. But at what cost? The cost is because we have reduced regulations, it makes it advantageous for companies to come here. It's a good thing? No, it's not a good thing because we have done that at the expense of our people. We have done that at the expense of the environment. So while in the short term it looks
How's
effective...
How has that been done?
Say that again?
How has that been done?
Let me tell you how it's been done. We have here, I live in Houston, near Houston, Texas, in a town called Kingwood, Texas. We have a part of Texas known as, a part of this area called Pasadena. It's also known as Cancer Alley. Because we have decided as a state to lower regulations on air quality and all these other sorts of things, there's a material difference between the people in Pasadena as opposed to the people further away from where this types of pollution is occurring, and we are paying the
price.
So
you want a mixture of capitalism with government, but you don't want to call it socialism.
We need to qualify our terms here. Mm-hmm. If I don't mind the term socialism to tell the truth, the reason I don't like to use the term socialism is that many people immediately equate the term socialism with something negative. And therefore, I will not allow anyone to co-opt the discussion of humanity by a semantical choice of words. I won't allow that. So you won't hear me say anything to the effect of socialism should work this way, X, Y, Z. I will simply discuss policy. And in discussing policy, what I will do is I'll ensure that you will see, Joe, that my policies are not anti-American. You will see that my policies are not anti-free enterprise, but my policies or the policies that I support are pro-people. But, Joe, I've been talking with you for a good time. Please stick with the program. I need to bring somebody else in, 210, my good friend from San Antonio. Come on in, 210. How are you doing today? My
San
bad.
San Antonio.
Come on in, John. How you doing?
Good. Big jazz day in San Antonio. Got the 75-year-old Charles Lloyd, a jazz legend, playing here in town.
Here you go.
It's a great show.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Talk to me, my brother. Talk to me.
All right. As far as, government mixing with free enterprise, that's happened since day one of our existence as a country. Taxes have always been supported. There have been, various rebellions, Shays Rebellion, the Whiskey Rebellion at the very beginning of our country. Shays Rebellion actually happened before, there was the Constitution was passed. But, the idea that government doesn't mix with free enterprise is the biggest fallacy out there. Government always mixes with free enterprise. Every country in the world has taxes. That's just the way it is. And so this whole idea that there is no mix when there is constantly a mix everywhere you go is just a tremendous fallacy. As far as your essay, I agree with what you're saying. We do need to look at the utilities, and we do need to look at which ones can be put to a better efficient use through government. But at the same time, I kind of have a hard time understanding, the complaint about, the WhatsApp thing, because, somebody came in, and whether Facebook overvalued it or not, they made a business decision to do that. I see your point. Your point is that everybody who works for the company should be evaluated, and, you know, should be paid their fair share, and I agree with that. But I don't really understand the main point that you're trying to get across.
I am glad you said that, because you are not the only person that said that. I passed it by somebody else, and that they had the same thing. And what it means is that I'm going to have a lot of talking to do tomorrow, but here's what I mean specifically, okay? The monies that Facebook is going to pay for WhatsApp is going to be extraction. And by the way, other calls, I'm coming to you. I'm going to 503 next, then 404, then 620. Well, you know what? I'm going to have to jump to 620 quickly because I missed him last week. But anyhow, what I mean by that is what's occurring is sort of a game at the top, John. A game at the top where these guys play with billions of dollars, right? And they play with billions of dollars that they have the wherewithal to play with. And they have the wherewithal to play with it because of our entire tax structure and how we decided that we were going to allow money to grow in this country. So it's not a direct answer. What comes for? Why does Facebook have $19 billion to pay to purchase WhatsApp? Why did the companies who purchased Facebook had the several billion dollars to purchase Facebook? All of this occur, and by the way, the reason I asked that question is first to realize what I said in the essay. The internet was created by we the people. The chips were created by we the people, who then use a lot of that technology to commercialize these different things. But at the same time, these companies who were able to commercialize these products, they fight like hell not to pay high enough taxes, you know, to pay it forward because of the investment that we the people made in all these areas. And when they don't make that reinvestment in America, they have that surplus capital that they can use to do the purchasing of Facebook, or of Facebook for the ones who purchased Facebook, and Facebook had that excess capital that they could use to purchase WhatsApp. What that is if you follow the path of the monies, that turns out to be a transfer of wealth. Because what happens is we are constantly, the masses, paying into a system that produces technology, produces research. There are companies, you watch what a university does. Two or three professors got a whole lot of money with grad students to create designs, to create new chemicals, to create new things. They then create a company to commercialize this thing, and when that company goes public, the school gets very little. The kids continue to pay high tuition. So what I'm saying is it is a complete infrastructure that moves monies to the top. I am not – yes, today I specifically looked at WhatsApp and Facebook, but it's the whole infrastructure of how money moves forward. You see what I'm saying, John?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but I mean, I'm not sure if that's necessarily a good example, because I mean, you know, again, they're doing is making a guess on what something that they think they can make money on.
I agree.
So I mean, I see your point. Your larger point is you want them contributing more to the betterment of America by paying a
right.
higher tax rate.
Right. Because
and I agree with that.
But I need to say a little further, John. It's a little deeper than that. They would not have had the $19 billion to pay WhatsApp. And WhatsApp's value would not have been $19 billion if the market had not had that overflow of capital present to provide that value. In other words, if the capital wasn't there for that value would be less. And I'm saying that value is there because it was extracted out of society. Society has never been paid back for what it has invested into all the research that went into the internet, all the research that went into the military that is then privately commercialized, which is by inference private. So what I'm saying is the WhatsApp Facebook issue is a result of the entire system in general. And that's why I talk about capitalism for a few while free enterprise, as opposed to free enterprise for all. But stay with me, John, because I want to make sure and get as many people as I can. And I'm coming to Jack. Jack, I'm going to ask you to please be ready to talk to me here. Jack, are you on?
Yeah.
Talk to me, Jack. Sorry I missed you last week, but make your point, my friend.
Okay, just give me a minute. Okay, I went to Cal State Northridge for about a year. And it was drummed into my head, or drummed in all our heads at the time, that profit maximization is the thing.
Yes, you're correct.
That was back in the 70s, back in 74, around that time. And I can go back to a time when I was binomial, binary theory, as far as computers go, you had ones and zeros and everything. That's back in the 50s, I think, maybe the early 60s. When I first was exposed to that. Okay, it's very complicated now.
Yes, it is.
Now, Facebook, okay. Now, let me divert a second. We can save money and take prisons. Now, what should be private enterprise and what should be
public?
Public. Okay. Now, I strongly believe that prisons should be all private. All not private, but all public.
Yes.
Yeah. The inmates in private prisons are treated very bad, and it just contributes to recidivism. You take Arizona particularly as an example of a lot of prisoner abuse.
Yes.
And certain things and everything that the Republicans want to privatize everything, and including I've worked at the post office, and post office, as far as I'm concerned, has been privatized for the last 20 years almost, since I retired from there in the 90s, because you're competing now with FedEx,
UPS,
and certain others that I can't name, but the post office is very efficient.
Sorry to interrupt you, Jack, but I got to come in here because I got a lot of calls. But you brought in very important points. Very, very, very important points. Because the prison system being privatized is a problem, and the Postal Service is not really out of funds. It's simply mismanaged by government. But anyway, let me go ahead and bring in, come on in, Dan. Dan Aronson, come on in, buddy.
What's going on, man? Let me shock you and John first, right?
Because
I can't do one without the other by agreeing with you. You're absolutely right.
God.
Let them value the company whatever they want and tax them fairly, and then everybody wins, right? That's the only way everybody wins. You're absolutely correct. And if they're and then let's put in a bunch of incentives for creating jobs, and then everybody wins. So you're absolutely right. The system it is a bipartisan building of a system for the last 35 years that has absolutely corrupted Washington and made it all about capitalism.
You know what?
I'm going to agree with you there.
Thank you, my brother. You know what is so funny? Oh, did you have okay? Here comes the butt.
Yeah, now let me drop the other shoe.
Okay.
Your demonization, your constant demonization of all things right, you're killing me here. I read this article. I went when you this article about Brooks.
Yes.
I just don't get your reaction to this
guy.
He says instead Republicans need to declare a truce on the social safety net. They need to assure the country that the net will always be there for the truly needy. And he points out that you can't do it through charitable donations. It's not enough. Now, here is a guy on the right that is trying to reach out to you, Egberto, and say, Egberto, We need to, you're right, we need a good social safety net, and you're demonizing the guy.
No, I did not.
You're telling me he's full of it.
No, I didn't
not,
say
you
I said
said he's disingenuous.
I didn't say he was disingenuous. What I said is he missed the point. And the reason I really said he missed the point is that at the same time that he says that about the social safety net, he brings in Arthur Brooks from the Policy Institute. And the problem that I have is you cannot build an argument on something that on a fallacy. And my thing was that it wasn't specifically on David Brooks. It was specifically on Arthur Brooks.
Arthur Brooks is the guy making the statements that I just quoted you. This wasn't
okay.
David Brooks. This was Arthur
right.
Brooks.
Right. Arthur Brooks, actually, his claim was, and you see the two claims that I read, and my concern about his claims is that if you assume that our policies right now are progressive, if you assume right now that you're stating our progressive that progressive policies is what leads to wealth disparity, then if you notice what Brooks said, and now not author now, the other Brooks said in his article, he said, let's give the social safety net a truce. In other words, let's just do a timeout on this. We're not looking for a timeout on things like a social safety net.
That's not what
we're
he
looking
said,
for-
Egberto. You're not reading. Read the next sentence. They need to assure the country that the net will always be there for the truly needy. That's not a truce. That's
saying
Republicans are wrong and that we need to have a strong social safety net. Here's a guy from the right saying we need to have a strong social safety net, and you're saying he's that's not what you want?
Actually, I do want that. Dan, I do want that. And I don't
that's
think
what he wants.
That's what I want. And here's the deal. I think you should check out what I normally write on David Brooks, because I'm generally supportive of David Brooks. This, I was actually talking about capitalism and what actually brought David Brooks to this particular article, which was in fact the Facebook, the Facebook WhatsApp kind of a deal. But I'm leaving you hot, Dan. I need to jump to 404 and then I'm going to continue. But your mic stays hot, brother.
Yes, sir.
404. Who do I have the honor of speaking with? 404, you're on. Isn't this Bobby Rodrigo?
Bobby, you're on mute.
Yeah, Bobby, you're on mute. Okay, I will leave that open till he gets his mute settled. Let's go to 412. 412, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, Egberto. This is Greg in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Greg. Talk to me, Greg.
I guess my feeling on all this really is, two things. One is that, I'm a capitalist, and I always have been. The part of
Amen.
Capitalism that seems to have been missing, I don't like to sound like I'm always pinning it back on the Reagan administration, but I am. We've lost capitalism with any sort of conscience. We don't seem
right.
to we don't seem to have a sense as individuals that there are aspects of our society that benefit everyone, including corporations, including
right.
for-profit endeavors, and that comes at a price, and that it the benefits actually do roll or should at least roll out to everyone. But this might be a little controversial to say as well, but I'll say it anyway. It's the libertarian faction of the GOP that has steered the conscience of the GOP away from anything that has any semblance of civility or recognition that society operates as a whole and not in terms of a top-down sort of mentality.
Greg,
now,
that's not at all.
Before anybody else jumps on this, I also wanted to add this. There are parts of the libertarian philosophy that I do agree with. So it's not. I'm not making this statement wholesale. I'm simply saying it from the angle and the perspective of what it means to live in a civil society. It's not I got mine, the hell with you. It's not go figure it out on your own. It's not pull yourself up by your bootstraps, because all those people at the top could not possibly be there without the rest of us.
Exactly.
And Democrats today have moved, in my opinion, a little too far to the right. They are not progressive anymore. They are not liberals anymore. They are corporatists, just like the Republicans are.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that. That is important. And then the other thing that I wanted to say is that, first of all, on our show, and notice I said our show, you never have to say this isn't going to come across wrong or whatever, because that is what we're a show of ideas here. 404, you're still hot in case you got to your phone. I think this is Bobby, but I'm not sure.
I'm here.
Talk to me, Bobby.
Dan Johnson called me. I had to take the call. You know me and Panda.
I hear you. Hey, tell him I say hi, okay?
I will do that. I will do that. Well, you could do that yourself when you show up in support of one of the Take Back the Tour concerts, Egberto. I mean, I fully expect you to do that.
Let me ask you, Bobby, before you go into your thing, I'd like to ask you a favor. Are you going to be there?
At all four of them.
Okay, what I'd like to ask is that you that not only do you promote whatever organization you're doing there, but that you promote Coffee Party and get me some Coffee Party pictures, videos, and that sort of stuff.
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Especially since we got a bunch of Coffee Party here in the room. I have already asked Coffee Party formally to come on board, buddy. I'm sorry. Let's put that marriage together immediately.
Bobby.
Are we going to have another board meeting breakout here?
No, we're going to have a breakout fight, Bobby. Here's the deal, all right? Coffee Party is us. Coffee Party is us all. All I'm asking for you to do is some logistics for us, my dear brother. We are all in. So please, if you can do that for your friend out here in Texas, because I probably can't be down there, I would love it so that we can start publicizing this stuff. So you are on, brother. You are on. You are on.
Absolutely.
All right, brother. Thank you. Come on in.
I saw your post. I understand where you're coming from. It's not hard to understand where you're coming from. I do have a problem with you saying that the money, the value, the $19 billion wouldn't be there. We really don't know that. I mean, I understand the philosophy of what you're saying, but we really don't know that. I think maybe your point, mm-hmm. to be a little critical, needs to be presented maybe a little differently from the other side, as this being an example of the way people are making money and how the middle class and the common and the rest of us are not making any money off of something that we're all involved with. I mean, I just
okay, good,
that.
Bobby. I'm glad you said that. And critique accepted. What I'd like to ask you to do right now. You just made an important critique. You think that I came across wrong in the way I said that. Accepted. Tell me what should I have said to say that my belief is, and if you believe this as well, that because of the way our system works, worth isn't distributed based on deeds, but on just the formation of movement of capital. Because like I mentioned in the piece, all of us were very much involved in the creation of the Internet. I mean, look, personally, myself, I worked on TCP/IP on the space station. I made just the average engineer's salary. Okay, now my question to you is, how do I speak in a manner to folks that makes them feel the worth, their own worth, in being able to change this system by saying, look, you are seeing the $19 billion paid to two guys that wrote a program that actually simply connects one person to another. They were not involved in the technology. They were not involved in the chips. They were not involved in any of these items that actually made that possible. None of those people have profited other than their salaries. But some fat cats at the top moving monies are the ones that are going to make it, and that money is extracted from the base. Please tell me, how do I express that differently? I really want
well,
to.
Well, I think it is always goes back to the beginning point of one of the Coffee Party platforms. I think everything begins and ends with corporate personhood and
right.
money and politics. And you point that out. I just don't think it's relevant to isolate. I guess the story is too isolated for me.
Are you talking about using Facebook and WhatsApp specifically?
Right. I think that's
okay.
what it is.
I buy that.
Isolated. Yeah, I think it needs to be, here's another example of, the following up a story that I did before on a story I did before, or just doing it, reestablishing the platform of, here's another example, and I offered these other ones in the past, of how
you know, wealth is at the top, and here's my reasoning as to why. You know, it almost is an attack on free market the way you do it, and I think that's why.
And you know, can I say something? I'll take that. Maybe the tonality sounds anti-free market, and I have to somehow find a way. I sometimes I get the feeling that we are so conditioned to think that anybody who speaks about not redistribution but fair distribution based on deed is somehow an anti-capitalist. If I'm not able to break through that myself, I have a problem. You see what I'm saying?
The problem is that we live in the world of identity politics.
Right.
So we also live in the world of identity economics.
Right.
So, we must first, you know, it's one of the arguments I have that I'm dealing with right now is why the majority of the Libertarian Party, when they speak, or the Libertarians, because I hate parties, we all know I hate parties, when they speak, they're always coming that we're conservative and we need to be more inclusive, and it frustrates me to no end, because, again, you can name a number of items that are plats that conservative and progressives have in common, which is what the Coffee Party is trying to do in the first place, is to bring that coalition together. So we live in such a world of identity politics, identity economics, that we need to be more stale and boring in that discussion and just get away from that. I saw something today that infuriated me. When it comes to, a libertarian thing that was put out there, and they were saying libertarians and conservatives. I'm like, because there's so many things that's on the Liberty platform that I agree with, and I'm not a conservative.
Can I jump in here in defense of my good friend Egberto Willis?
Go ahead, Dan.
Egberto, I was so proud of you for standing up to Joe, who we all know is the one angry Jew. I came up with a new nickname for him this morning, Mega Troll. but I was so proud of you. Socialism works and is – what is the root word of socialism shares – is shared in the same root word as society. We live in a society. We have chosen to live as a group of people with cooperative efforts, and that's what socialism is about. And socialism is a good thing in the right measure. And it is the obvious and necessary balance to capitalism. You have to have both if we live in a society.
Exactly.
The extreme libertarians say, nah, kill what you keep, or keep what you kill. That's their thing. That's where they lose me. Fine, if you want to go up into Montana, into the mountains, and be on your own, fine, do it. Don't get off my power grid, get off my internet, get off my – all that stuff that you said, and rightly so, we all helped build – that's what it is.
That is a Republican position.
Nah.
Socialism's definition is a political and economic theory of social organization that advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned, that's key, or regulated by the community as a whole. That's a key. The word owned. And as far as a...
Or regulated. Why did you skip or regulated?
Yeah.
Well, no.
Hey,
the disconnect between the liberty movement and socialism is that they want individual ownership. That's the one thing in the definition that they have a problem with.
And there should be some from column A and some from column B. That's all I'm saying. They both can coexist, but it's up to us as a society to decide how much socialism and how much capitalism is allowable.
It's been
tilted to the capitalist side for the last 35 years, as my good friend Greg Resick will tell you, and we need to tip it back.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
now let me tell you how what would help the conversation a lot, Bobby. Let me tell you what would help the conversation a lot, and I'm not talking about here, but when we do some of these postings, because when one has a view that they're putting out there, it really really helps, because if you listen to what Dan says, what Greg says, Bobby, John. We should be not having these discussions only on this 1 hour that we're talking here, but when I make some of these postings, or you make some postings, or Dan makes some postings, be there to not necessarily, hey, you did it XYZ, But to add to the discussion, you see, like what you did, Bobby, when you came in, and or what actually John started it when John said, "But Egberto, I really have a problem with this because it sounds like you're saying X, Y, Z." I think that doesn't only necessarily help the author, the writer, myself, or Dan, or whoever writes the piece. It actually helps the people who are actually reading our stuff, because the discussion actually shows those points of view and how we respond to those particular points of view. It's not an argument. It's not a fight. It's an exchange of ideas to make things better. And, you know, so I like what I'm hearing. And actually, I have a feeling tomorrow the response to this stuff is going to be pretty darn, you know, complicated based on what John said. And, John, you haven't spoken in a while. Come on in.
Yeah, I just want to push back a little bit on the idea of identity politics and identity economics are a bad thing. I mean, I think that having an identity, having beliefs, I just don't see how that can be identified as having a bad thing at all. I mean, of course, I don't agree.
I'm going to try to answer that for some of the folks, and y'all can tell me to go to you know where. But I think it's not. I think we're mixing up the terms identity politics with the way we argue about the specific politics. And let me give a perfect example of what I'm talking about. And Janine, I'm putting you hot right now so that you can come in as soon as I'm done here. Let me tell you what I'm talking about exactly. What I'm talking about exactly is a conservative belief is small government with a lot more restrictive social safety net, and the liberal philosophy is the opposite: more government and more heavier safety net. Neither one of those are intrinsically wrong, but if we're going to form a society, we have to have a society that decides this is what we want. In other words, we know that if we go with a conservative philosophy, there will be more people that get less support in bad times. And if that's what society wants to live with, that's fine. And on the other side, the converse is true as well. So it's neither wrong or right. It's what we want. But come on in, Janine.
Well, listen, I just wanted to add my little two cents about this whole notion of socialization versus capitalism. But I think part of what we're talking about here is privatization, like what belongs in the hands of business and what belongs in the hands of government. And what I never hear people say is, but what is the event horizon? In other words, if we're asking for an enduring, never-ending, I can always count on you functionality, then you're not looking at business. Business is not enduring. Business morphs. Business follows money.
Right.
So I think sometimes we confuse opportunism with business interest in doing the bidding of the state. I mean, I'm not against contractors. I'm not against privatization. But for goodness sakes, in Arizona, they sold the state house. They sold the prisons. They made a lot of money selling off their infrastructure. Now they rent it back, and the event horizon on that is they're going to pay way more than they made.
Exactly.
Right? This was a foolish thing to do. And that's why I get weirded out about the privatization of prisons, the privatization of war, the privatization of certain things. You talked about health care, Egberto, and I would love to have a conversation probably in an entirely different show about why that's actually infrastructure and why it is not enterprise. And so
I agree with you.
Yeah, so I guess that's my whole thing. There was a very disingenuous use of the term socialism earlier on, and I think we've all sort of established that it was like one of those cut and paste out of the coloring book kind of definition.
Right.
And the other thing that confuses me or concerns me is when I was a business person. I started my own company from scratch, you know, and I felt like I was a member of the free enterprise community, like no kidding, skin in the game, ass on the line. And I tell you what, though, these companies morph to the point where they're actually a part of the oligarchy. They're actually a part
exactly.
of the few who run everything. And I cannot for the life of me call that free enterprise. And with that, I'll yield the floor.
Look, that is that I couldn't have said it any better. And in fact, you actually used your title, man. That you actually used the title of the show, which was Unfettered Capitalism for Few or Free Enterprise for Us All. And that's what I believe
exactly.
in. Now, look, this has turned out to be a great, great show as usual. I'm sorry that we keep it to an hour, but there are a whole lot of other things that, you know, personally I'm into and other folks are into as well. So I think this time that we get together to kind of wet the palate, if you will, is super helpful. I'd always love to continue the conversation both at the Coffee Party Facebook page or at my site, whichever place you got to me from. It is actually great. I think this was a great conversation. So I kind of let it go a little bit. So I'm going to ask everybody to give me a quick 15-second close, and it has to be 15 seconds. So I'm going to start with Dan. A quick 15 seconds, please, Dan.
Socialism is not evil.
Thank you, my friend. Jack, give me a quick 15 seconds. I'm holding you to it.
Okay. Socialism is sociability comes from the same roots. Communism and community come from the same roots. And, capitalism, I don't know what word to use, but...
No problem, brother. You got your 15 seconds, my friend. Hey, thanks for calling as usual, my friend. Let me go to Bobby, 15 seconds.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you can. Okay, cool. I didn't think you could. I thought my phone was locked up. I don't believe that we've had a swing of capitalism over too excessively to the capitalism side. What I think we've had is crony capitalism that is hijacked through capitalism to the capitalism side.
Thank you, Bobby. Greg Rusak.
Capitalism with a conscience is clearly much preferred over crony capitalism. And it's possible, and I think absolutely vital, that capitalists appreciate that it's not always about making the very last dime off of the rest of us. You owe society a debt of gratitude.
Man, that is prescient, Greg. I love that one. It's not that you have to make that last penny. That is prescient. Janine, give me 15 seconds, my dear.
No, I can't follow that one. All I can say is that when you socialize the risk and you privatize the profit, you are missing the boat.
Amen. I love that one. And, of course, my buddy from San Antonio, John.
Yeah, I just want to agree with Janine about the privatization of so many things that used to be in the public enterprise. And that's about it. Enjoyed the show.
Thank you very much, John. Folks, please remember that we have several shows here at Coffee Party. On Sundays, we have Progressive Politics with Tennessee Style with Bud Fields. That's 3 p.m. on Sundays, Eastern Time. On Mondays, we have Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson, and that is on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern. On Tuesdays, we have, well, I don't think Tuesdays we'll be going for a while now. So let's go with Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. We have Lunch with Loudon, and that's Janine, who was just on a few seconds ago. And Saturdays, of course, you're with me, yours truly, Egberto Willis with Politics Done Right. Folks, I really enjoyed the conversation. Let's continue the conversation at the Facebook page. We post quite often, so please go out there and be a part of our messaging. Please also remember, share these shows. Please remember to share whatever you find that we put out there on Facebook, and we're all in this together. I want to close out by playing one little coffee party promo.
Hello, everyone. This is John Cashin, host of the Coffee Party Radio Civics Minute. Did you know that the Coffee Party is funded by our listeners and fans, and not by the super PACs, think tanks, or by a super wealthy individual wanting to buy the American way? The Coffee Party USA is powered by the people and your passion to bring positive change to our country, but we need your help to continue. With just a small donation, you can help us continue bringing Americans together for a dialogue that attempts to bypass the normal partisan rhetoric that is so common today. The Coffee Party USA is striving to bring you original content from editorials, fact-checking, and video documentaries. We're also working to bring you the latest information from all of the 535 congressional districts. No matter what party we may belong or what issues that we follow, one thing is always clear. We are all Americans. Please go to coffeepartyusa.nationbuilder.com/donate and donate what you can to help us move our country forward, united with one voice, e pluralis unum. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cash.